that's all I can say for what's coming. Robert Ghostwolf is an accomplished artist and author. He enjoys a unique passion for life, possessing many gifts which have earned recognition with indigenous tribes in both North and South America as a spiritual healer and ceremonial leader. He has many archaeological discoveries to his credit, including a Sphinx in Colorado, the rescue of the now-famous Miami Circle with Richard C. Hoagland, where they brought the eyes of the world to what is now being called the American Stonehenge. Currently, Robert is in the middle of uncovering an incredible find in the U.S., in the central U.S., which, by all indications, could be an American Hall of Records, showing amazing evidence of many civilizations that were here before the current Native American tribes. Which has, all of this might change recorded history as we have been told. I don't suppose they didn't tell us the whole story, do you? Much of the evidence indicates that they have discovered a library of the lost tribes. Robert says, quote, "This find is going to change everything we thought we knew," end quote. And I could tell you much more about Robert, and I will. He's got a lot of publications to his credit, Winds of Change, Last Cry, which continue to sell like crazy. I'm sure as the evening progresses, he will tell you how to get some of these publications. Danion Brinkley? Well, I shouldn't have to introduce Dan at all. Dan died. He was struck by lightning. All the hair burned from his body. His body was on fire. His vital signs ceased. And Danion Brinkley's story has been told in book, in the movies. And you ought to know who Danion Brinkley is. And I guess the big question is why the two of these gentlemen are here tonight together. I'm going to let them unfold the story. One thing I will tell you first, though, is we have some of the most incredible photographs you have ever seen in your whole life. They're going to blow your mind. They're on my website right now. They're also on the wolflodge.net website. And we'll tell you how to get there. But you should begin going to the net now to see these photographs. Photographs that may change the world as we know it now. Is that an understatement? Good morning, everybody. Robert, are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning. Great to have you back on the program.
Good to be back, Art.
And Danion Brinkley.
Hi, Art.
Hi, Dan. How you doing?
Wonderful.
Well, I heard you were sick as a dog.
Well, don't tell everybody that. These are one of those nights when you're truly thankful, Art.
Well, that's true. You are moderately okay, though, just down with the...
Just tired.
You know what? Almost everybody I know is sick right now.
But you know what? You always are right. You told me not to go. You told me not to do it. You told me to take easy. I was going to get sick again.
Yeah, I told you that.
And I hate it when you tell me that kind of stuff.
And you got
sick. I hate it when you're right.
Uh-huh. Well, I've given up on trying to change you, Dan. There's no way.
Oh, well.
You're unchangeable.
Same thing they say about you, Art.
I know. I
bet you this. There's a bunch of unchanging going to happen to both of us with this stuff Robert's doing.
All right, let's get down to it. My God, Robert, what have you found? And
all right, let me first say how I got into this.
Good. Yeah,
I'm going back and forth to Egypt and always looking at these kinds of things. And Casey, and because after you have two or three near-death experiences, you know you don't die, so you just wonder about everything else. Ronnie Mound, Compassion in Action in Spokane, working her tail off in VAs, she came and she said, do you know Robert? And I said, sure. I've seen him talking, casual friends.
Right.
And she said, you know, he was going through a lot of stuff in his life. And she said, would you talk to him? Sure. And as I talked to him, you know, everybody goes through those kinds of things. Good times and bad times. And
right.
As I talked to him, I was watching him. And what he was doing with this dig was amazing. So as I said, listen, if it is this, and it's this possibility, there are ways to check this thing out. And so through CIA, Compassion Action, and what his wife does, and helps in the VAs, and she said, I really trust all this stuff. So I read everything on the internet, and then I called him, and I talked to him, and I spent a little time with him. And then he trusted me enough to show me two things. And it was just little artifacts and details about a place. And I felt it move through me. And I didn't know what it was at that point. So I started talking to him and, you know, spending time with him. And that's how I came into this.
Well, I've got photographs in front of me that are on the website. I guess mine and on Robert's. We're going to try to get as many people to see it as we can. And what I'm looking at, if you're telling me this came from the United States, it's impossible. It's impossible. These artifacts, and I'm just a layman, but, you know, I've been to Egypt, as you all know, Dan.
Oh, yeah.
And what I'm seeing in front of me...
that one Egyptian picture is what got me, Art.
Yeah.
You know, I hear that stuff all the time.
I mean, this can't be.
And when I saw that Egyptian, because of what I know about Egypt, and I know which dynasty it came from, it's Greek, it's when the Greek occupations in the, when it was the Ptolemaic occupation. So I took a look at it, and I took the copy to Zahi.
Zahi was.
Yes, and I asked him.
Our mutual friend.
Mm-hmm, and I said, look, Zahi, look at this and tell me when and what period it would come from. And as he was telling me where and the designs and when that period would be, if we had a small piece of this stone, and Zahi overlooking, you know, the research of it, then we would know exactly when and where it came from.
I'm surprised Zahi didn't do his usual, you know, it's illegal to take things like this out of Egypt speech.
That was how I hooked him. Somebody stole it 3,000 years ago. The Arabs is in trouble.
They're going to look for me for that now?
Oh, yeah. They put on, it'll be on the website. You know what, Art? I was just, you know how I am about Egypt.
Yeah.
I saw Zahi, because I would push him around. I saw Zahi fight in the Congress to put the capstone on. I saw him fight to put it on.
So there's some big news coming here. Are you going to get it?
This is the biggest stuff. Then it's guaranteed they will not put the capstone.
You're telling us now.
Right now.
The plan to put the gold capstone on midnight, December 31st, Egyptian time, is now not going to happen?
Not going to happen.
You know this for sure?
Absolutely. They haven't even announced it or said a word.
Oh, my God. What stopped it?
You know, here's the cool part, Art. Zahi fought to get it put on. They found it, you know. The original.
Yeah, I know. He bragged to me that he was going to put it on when I was there.
Everybody fought it. The Congress.
So,
nobody
why?
Knows.
I mean, why?
It wasn't Zahi first, Art.
I've got you, but what is the opposition?
Zahi was fighting to get it put on.
I know. What is the opposition saying? Why are they not doing it? Why will they
because
not allow
they
it?
Because they think a helicopter or a terrorist might shoot it, then the helicopter fall. Or the two helicopters. And they don't think it would be right because too many pyramidology, New Age, all those typical ways of stopping it from happening. And I mean, it was a battle that he stood and fought.
And lost, and it's not going to happen. So you're
no,
just,
it means it
like,
wasn't, it's not Zahi that, whoever's controlling that stuff. Isn't that wonderful?
You're saying, isn't it wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
That they're not going to do it?
Well,
I don't know.
Not wonderful about that part, Art. But that there is truly something happening. To not put that capstone on. Somebody knows something or is afraid of something.
Yeah, I agree with you. Somebody either knows that this will activate what a lot of people believe to be some kind of machine, and something will begin to happen. Or maybe it's not so wonderful, Dan. Maybe with the state of the world right now, that capstone is supposed to be replaced. And if it isn't, sentence trails off.
I think that's why we're having this radio show tonight, isn't it? You know? And that is cool. You know?
Maybe that's cool.
And I saw this stuff and I went, Zahi. I said, okay, Zahi, we're going to help you find the person who stole this stuff.
Oh, you're
and we're
going to
return.
No. Bear in mind, folks, we're talking about photographs of an archaeological dig that Robert is about to tell us about, Robert Goswold. These are very, very high-res, good photographs of things that simply...
In America.
There's no way in hell or North America that I can see these things could have come up out of our ground. So, Robert, what the hell have you found? How much are you willing to tell us other than, I mean, you've got these incredible photographs, including the one Dan's talking about that I want to ask you about.
Yeah.
And so here they are. What have you found? How'd you find it?
Well, the story goes back a long time now. It's been something that I've been passionately involved in for years.
Secretly, apparently.
And I was involved with it with a mutual acquaintance of ours, a fellow named Speaking Wind. You recall him?
The late Speaking Wind.
Yes. And we were working on some projects together based upon the understanding through some ancient manuscripts and documents.
And he showed me some of those, Art.
You've seen them, Dan?
Yeah.
Okay.
That the world might not be the way we were told it was. And the story goes on to my particular quest in this was always trying to find the truth behind a particular fable. And that fable had to do with the Pale Prophet.
The Pale Prophet?
The Pale Prophet.
Good stuff, Art.
Known by various names.
I just watched him.
And here, he's known as, in here meaning in North America, he's been known by the names of Jesus, Wekomatete.
Is this Ganamira. A native tradition, a native nation person?
Yes. In South America, he was known as Quetzalcoatl.
Okay, got it.
And his prophecy was that things are not as we thought them to be, or he explained in these papers.
He was known throughout each of these cultures by a different name with each culture, but the teachings.
But the native nation,
the original native nations here.
He described
the conquistadors came over, and they were telling everybody here about their religion and their beliefs. Everybody welcomed them because it was the story of a person who they knew.
Yes.
The artifacts that have remained after that period of time, the same thing that Patrick and I were working on together was that we were given information as to, at the time of this being's disappearance or departure from here,
yes,
where he promised to return at a certain time and a certain date, that the prophecies that go along with that have to do everything with the Mayan calendar, with the telling of time, with the recording of events that happened here that are parallel to the Bible. Totally parallel to the Bible.
Well, that might be good or bad sometimes.
That might be good or bad. It's like the first one. Might be good or
so
bad.
What happens when a bunch of Christians get together?
And what we did,
they kill people, you know, to take over countries and stuff like that.
Well, so do other religions. It's not just Christians. All the religions kill each other, and generally in the name of their specific god.
Reminds me of a John Lennon song.
Yeah.
What we were looking for was specific sites. There were 12 sites when he left.
All of this was suggested in the...
In the manuscripts.
The manuscripts, huh?
Well, can I add one point in this, Robert?
Go ahead.
For me, Art, Thomas got here in 1492. And having this piece of this artifact and the others from Egypt, and it had to be in the ground before 1492, and I can prove that.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, but that can't be, so that means, Dan...
That means it's a good grid, wouldn't it?
It means we were lied to. Or, I guess maybe not intentionally lied to. Maybe the lie occurred a long time ago, and it's just been perpetuated by the educational system. But I'm with you, 1492.
And so, for me, when I watched it, it is transforming this man. And when I watched it, I said, well, let me see. Then I just looked at it. I was going to Egypt, and a lot of those things I don't know anything about. The Egyptians, I know. And if I can find out where it came from, what age it is, and what dynasty, when it's from the time Greeks occupied. And I can prove that it got there before 1492, geologically. That is the wildest stuff in the world.
I hear you, man. All right, everybody hold on. And I recommend, if you want to know, if you really want to know what we're talking about here, go to my website or the wolfalodge.net website. And all right, for those of you trying to get to the photographs, even our website, which has tremendous amount of bandwidth, is being completely bogged down right now. With people trying to see the photographs, so they're loading slowly. Bear with us. You can see them on one of two websites, mine or the Ghostwolf Lodge.net. Is that right, Robert?
Wolflodge.org. O-R-G.
O-R-G. Okay, thank you. Both, even my site, I notice, is bogging down right now.
But they can always go to Danian.com and...
Okay, that's another one.
In action if they're bored.
Oh, I see. Okay, you don't have the photograph.
So. He's got nice pictures of himself up there.
Yeah.
I mean, I got them all around, so just put me up for a moment.
All right.
You know what? Think about it. Zahi has no idea where it came from.
He must have totally freaked out.
No, I didn't even tell him.
I understand.
That it came out of a dig.
No, I know.
I said, look, there's a whole collection of this stuff someone has. I can identify it and see where it came from and what period. I'll help you arrest him.
Oh, you'll help arrest him?
Sure.
Whoever this dastardly person is.
Yeah, it's probably been dead for 100 years.
So, Zahi, who is a brilliant man, looked at all these and said what?
He says, I can tell you which period it is, and he could read the hieroglyphics on it.
He could read the hieroglyphics?
Yes. And he said if I had a sample of it, I could date it and see where it came from and what region, what period of time. And usually they would know when it was excavated or when, you know, discovered or been looted or whatever. And he would tell me.
So, we have one of two things here. We either have the biggest hoax ever perpetrated anywhere. I mean, it's like salting a mine with gold, with the diamonds or something. Or we've got something that is going to blow open archaeology and the history of the world as we thought we knew it. We have one of these two, right?
That's what Daniel's made all his trips.
Hold it. One at a time. Robert?
I said that's why Daniel's made all his trips to Egypt.
In order to verify.
To bring back all these things in small parcels.
Yeah, but what if, Robert, it's got to be asked, obviously, what if somebody went to Egypt, stole some of these things, and brought them here and buried them like diamonds salted in a mine to be found?
If Egypt is all we were talking about, then I would say, okay, that would be interesting. But the other strange thing about that situation would be that whoever did that would have had to done that a long time ago. A very long time ago. This wasn't just done.
And right. if I can prove, then it had to be before 1492. And if it's right, you know, and as I begin to truly look at it, knowing the Egyptian parts, knowing it, and at the same time, in the end of the year, and the capstone's not going on, then the point that is revealed in this storage place or this sacred place was to tell us, to show it to us, that that capstone must be on, and they know something. And I look at Casey and all the predictions, and then I can prove, because of my nature and knowledge of Egypt, first that point, and there's a bunch of objects. If I can prove that point, then how geologically old this place is. Then look when it begins to steady go through each of those things.
These are impossible. Even some of the other photographs, and I'm only a layman, but some of the other photographs, number 21 I'm looking at, for example, no way. Some people might say, all right, well, this is Native American. Obviously, it's not.
Etruscan. I mean, I know a bunch of what those pictures are and their time periods because I love to study that kind of stuff. But what's really fun is I watch this discovery. Look at all that stuff. Watch Robert change. And all of a sudden, when you look all your life for something, and maybe in a little cynical way, you all of a sudden begin to find there is a basic truth to the native traditions and what they believed and knew over here. What I love about it the most part that this discovery is in the United States. All these things are here.
Yeah.
They can be tested at the universities, controlled and looked at, done step by step, not sensationalized, verified, and reported step by step to you. Mark Bell, this is the report on it.
When may I ask, Robert, when you began this to dig for this, actually physically putting a shovel in the ground and beginning to dig and finding these artifacts, when?
The late spring.
The late spring of this year?
This year, 99. Oh, this particular
when you
site.
Began finding these things, Robert, what did you... You must have done a backflip. I mean, you must have said, what in the hell?
Or drank a lot of liquor.
Yeah.
Man, I thought about if it was me, Art.
It was like, when, like Daniel said, he came over to see me. I was working with a mutual friend, Ronnie Mound, who is with Compassion in Action here.
Right.
And Ronnie said, Daniel's got to see these things because... What I was finding as I was laying these things out, which also included some pieces from the Yucatan, was that we were getting a whole prophecy, a whole story laid out here. And the location of this site and the pieces that we found simply affirmed the prophecies. And the prophecies were talking specifically about this time, things that were going to happen in this period of time, this next 30, 40 years that we're going through. And they related to not only things that happened back in history, but they related to the calendars and that these things would happen again. And what we're trying to represent here just with the pictures, which is just a small, small portion of what we're sifting through now.
How many artifacts in total have you come up with so far from this dig?
We have a couple of hundred artifacts.
A couple of hundred. You cannot report to us where this is. The closest you're going to say is Middle America?
Let's tell everybody it's in Pahrump under Art Bell's house.
Oh, get away.
What?
Middle America. I'm in the Southwest. He says Middle America, right, Robert?
We're going to say it's Middle America.
Thank you.
And it's there, Art.
There's no, there are people digging out here for enough stuff as it is.
Well, I mean, you know... What would they do if they went over there?
These artifacts, folks, when you look at them...
They would rob and desecrate it.
Yeah, they'd be robbed and desecrated, so we're not going to reveal these specific locations.
Not until we get you down there with a camera, Art.
These hieroglyphics, Dan, when you took them to Zahi and he read them, what did he say they
said? Ptolemaic period.
Say what?
It came from the Ptolemaic period. It is as they make their etchings.
Yes.
Different from other time periods. Ptolemaic, Greek occupation.
Would have been about what year?
Probably 429 B.C. to about 200 A.D.
429 B.C. to 200 A.D.?
Mm-hmm.
This is just, it's not possible.
Yeah, that's what I kept trying to tell myself. But can't wait to help Art. Can't wait to help Zahi catch this thief. I didn't tell him where it came from.
Even at the very end, you didn't tell him?
Never told him. He thinks somebody has a collection of stuff that was stolen.
Boy,
he knows that we dug it up before 1492.
My God.
Are we going to have a good time with Zahi or what?
Well, I wouldn't have too good a time, Dan. You're going to end up at the bottom of a 50-foot pit somewhere below one of the pyramids.
He'd probably find his way out.
Yeah, he probably would. Or he'd rise once again, as he's been known to do.
Yeah, isn't it terrible?
So, Robert, you've been holding this secret all this time since springtime?
We've been doing extensive research at the site. And correlating the information, sending the information out so that we could get interpretations of what it was saying. And that takes a tremendous amount of time. It takes a long time to do the translations and the writings. The writings are Greek, from what we can tell, Greek, from the period of between 500 BC to 200 AD.
It's just, it can't be.
Which would move it during the dynasties of Cleopatra, you know, after Caesar.
There's no, explain to me how this could be. I mean, this clearly, the hieroglyphics are Egyptian. They come from a period that we can identify. But
do you remember a long time ago on the show, I came in and I had two amulets.
Yes.
And we called it ancient sightings. And on the amulets was a carved figure of what I called Horus or Ra.
Yes.
Okay. Well, they came from this site.
Oh, well, you didn't tell me that.
Oh, you didn't tell me that either till just now.
They were given to me by an old Indian man who said to me, take care of these because one day they'll show you where they came from.
There's the key.
And I said, they'll show me where they came from. And I was in the middle of Indiana in the cornfields.
I wish you were there now. I hate to hear this kind of stuff, Art. Makes so much sense.
And all of a sudden, after years, some people came over to me and said, hey, look, we found this. We heard you on our show.
No,
we know what you're involved in. We know about these things. Take a look at these. And I started to take a look at it, and I realized that it was a connection to everything that I had been working on. It was like pieces of a jigsaw puzzle being brought back. But the amazing thing here was when I looked at these things and I first came up and said, well, where did they come from?
Yeah.
Did you get them from Greece?
Right.
Did you get them from me? Where did they come from?
Right.
And they said, no, we got them from right here. I've never seen such a collection of different writings, different cultures in one place. You see. Here. I've never seen that.
And they're from different periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
There's some stuff that is Greek, literally, you can look at it. Then Etruscan. Then there's Celtic stuff. Has to be maybe 900 years old. Looking at the lettering.
So
someone gathered this from all over the world and put it in one place.
Right. And the writings are in Celtic. They're in Greek.
Hebrew and Coptic.
And Coptic.
So you know it has some religious context.
There's a lot of religious context.
Does this mean... let me see if I can get this straight. Are you saying that...
This is almost as good as a near-death experience.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, to tell you
that these things were indigenous to the area where you found them, or they were brought from other parts of the world at a time when they could not have been.
That's what I say.
I can't work this out in my mind, guys.
They weren't just loose pieces laying around. They were actually part of the structure.
They were built and put into a sacred temple as a part of what it would be to uncover. The same way Casey described the Hall of Knowledge.
And he talks about those halls of knowledge being found at this time.
And what I like about Robert, or no matter what people are always saying, Native tradition gave it to him because he learned the right to protect it. He came to me. He didn't go pushing it off to everybody to make a movie or make yourself great and wondrous. He kept it sacred. He came to me. I looked and I keep it quiet. I'm going to help. Try to verify it from my way. I went to Egypt. I came back and learned about putting the camp stone on. And he's never done anything to try to glorify himself. Thus it almost broke. Protecting a sacred site.
This is not a sacred indigenous American native site, is it?
Well, go ahead.
Or is it?
No, Robert, I don't know.
No, this is not. This is much older.
This is...
The stories of the native people, when we understand what's been being said for 500 years, and we move into something that I and a few other people refer to as the Red Heart Path.
The way for humans to learn the native tradition, nature, between the elements, to commune with nature.
And they're always talking about their ancestors, that they will come back.
Right.
Our ancestors coming back. The ones will come back. Our ancestors will come back. And
these
particular
ancient
time,
ones, the old ones.
The old ones will come back. And in this particular time, You go to Yucatan, you go to Belize, you go to Peru, you go up to Colorado, you go into places even in Montana, you go, well, who did these? And they always refer to them as the old ones. And it's an incredible knowledge, incredible science, incredible mathematics involved in all of these things, and they all had to do with calculations. This is something that Richard and I fought so hard for, to try to explain what we could find out from that Miami Circle.
Yes.
Was that this is the way they built their computers back then. This is how they calculated it. And that brings us to the thing, the situation with the capstone. When you're going and you're playing with a global computer, when you're working with something that's been built deliberately on certain ley lines and certain grid lines for a specific purpose, before you get the whole picture, and if we can create a scenario, an opportunity, a window where we can go in and study these things with everything that we have now, and as much as we complain about the world, we're more open to being able to do this now than it's ever been able to be seen in the history of humanity.
Because a lot for Art Bell.
Well, I'm just here as a conduit to let you guys tell the story, and this is some damn story.
Art, think about it from this way. Here's the capstone. What my inner nature of going through that stuff, I know the room's there, and I can feel and sense things. This is a machine. Put in the capstone on, especially with the goal. What would it be the most important time in it if it was a machine?
You and I both know Zahi is one of the most stubborn individuals on the face of the globe, perhaps short of yourself.
Yeah, he's like me. He's a jackass.
Yeah, and so you don't suppose he might go ahead and do it anyway, do you?
They wouldn't let Mubarak do it, Art. It was Mubarak's suggestion.
And they wouldn't let Mubarak do it.
I was seeing the fight.
But Zahi is one stubborn... All right,
he was trying, but watch. When would be the most appropriate time in the destiny of spirituality if this machine, built in perfect geometrical configuration, sitting in the center of a magnetic gravity or magnetic field?
What makes you think at this point in time we don't need that machine? Listen.
I know we need it.
All right, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. Danian Brinkley is here. Robert Ghostwolf is here. And the pictures are beyond belief. Well, we need that little sound. Where is that foul little sound? Let me get it up here. Here we go. There it is. All right. Now, you can see these photographs either at my website, www.artbell.com, or Wolf Lodge, that's WOLFLODGE.org. WolfLodge.org. And I've plugged enough of my stuff. Listen, I understand that you've got a couple of things you'd like to plug, and you've got a toll-free number for it, so you must have a couple things you want to plug. Robert?
Can I plug mine first, Art?
Yeah, sure.
Speaking of Christmas, this ad that you did, I'd like to ask everybody who listens to Art Bell Champions to send a Christmas card to a veteran, because I got up from the dead that last time because of the prayers of your people and you turning out and helping me, and I live to see a chance at these three sites and what it is and where we sit this day, that in a physical world even divisions and the stuff that I've been through comes true. So for veterans, compassion in action, and taking that prayer system that they use to help me, which I know prayer words, and in divine grace, definition of those two words, please send a Christmas card to a veteran. I mean, they deserve to know that. That's my...
I think they knew prayer worked then, too.
And yeah, well, let's make that... Oh, yeah, there's no question about it. The other thing is, I'd like to say this, that absolutely, unequivocally, there were existences and civilizations before this one.
Obviously.
And that capstone is a machine, and I know this. And why the capstone was supposed to put on at this particular point is because of the solar storms. It would take that electromagnetic energy, diffuse it back into the world, and let it create a pure energy. So as the shift comes, it would be easier or more balanced and harmony and control, the solar storms. That's what it was about. Somebody knows that.
That could easily be true. I don't discount that thought at all. And the sun has an effect on our weather, which has an effect on the shifts that occur. It all works together. Now, let me turn to Robert for a second. Robert,
yes.
What are your? You have a late publication, don't you?
Two.
What are they?
One of them is called Through the Eye of the Shaman.
Through the Eye of the Shaman.
Through the Eye of the Shaman.
I have a copy of it here, by the way. It's beautiful.
And that's now available. And the new one that's going out now is The Days of Destiny, which tells about this site and all of these prophecies that have to do with this particular time and the importance of activating these ancient sites at this time, because they were here for a specific purpose, and the purpose was to protect us against what may seem like an unbelievable science fiction cataclysmic period that we're headed into.
Mm-hmm.
But as Daniel was just saying, if we can change the way we perceive, if we can somehow eliminate the separations and become together as a people
without having to
with the power of that thought, we can change the outcome of what's coming. I mean, it's coming. We've been through this with the Hopi.
Yep. You brought me the Hopi. We talked to them. They seem to have a somewhat different view. They said you might change it a little, but it's underway and
it can't stop it.
Yeah.
It cannot be stopped.
All right. That said, listen, you don't do promos well. There's a toll-free number for these new publications. So let's get that out. It's
the number is 1-800.
Oh, God, I love it so much.
646-746-7770.
And they can order right now?
They can order right now. We have 14 people standing in line.
All right. 1-800-646-7770.
And then there's the fax line.
Oh, really?
Which is 1-888. 690-3970.
All right. Actually, Through the Eyes of the Shaman is your third book. And I guess the fourth, a manuscript, which is just beautiful, Days of Destiny. Both are now available, and Days of Destiny, of course, is going to lay all of this out, the secret you're just letting out. I've got a fax here that I want to ask both of you about from Ohio. It's from Ed in Cincinnati, listening to KRC. Dear Art, I was a student of the Casey readings for about 20 years, and I distinctly remember a reading which stated that Atlantis existed as far west in the United States as the Mississippi River. Are these remains from the Atlantean culture?
Intuitively, yes.
Yes?
Yes, intuitively, they are. There's much more to this find than we have here. But we're not ready to speak about it yet. Because
this is going to blow the top of what you've got right here. Is going to blow everything up.
What I think about it, Art, I don't know. Atlantis had to go in this last deluge 25,000 years ago. None of the artifacts that I have seen date back that far.
Well, if we were asking our friend in Egypt, he would say, of course not.
Yeah, isn't it fun that we're going to have to go find somebody that's been dead for 1,000 years to lock him up for stealing that artifact?
Yeah.
And he's going to prove that himself? For me, Art, the sheer fact that this is 1,000 years, and it is built as a temple site, these rooms, and it has these historical things gathered from everywhere, Etruscan, from Ireland, Celtic. The Celtic one appears to be the most modern by looking at the textual way they designed the letters and the language.
Yes.
But the Hebrew is ancient. And the hieroglyphics are ancient.
Ancient.
And then there is one piece that is, it's Greek.
There,
it's almost Mesopotamian, and the inscription in it is Assyrian.
Unless you're willing to speculate about the Atlantean culture or a hoax, then you're lost. I mean, there is no way to explain how these things could end up in Middle America.
Is there more to be yet excavated, Robert?
There's a lot more.
A lot more?
There's a lot more. We just scratched the surface.
And if this one exists, the culture, the history, tradition, and myth says there are 12 of them.
12 sites?
12 of these locations where the records have been kept.
Boy, don't you hope it's a hoax.
I'm not exactly sure what I hope as a result of this.
Well, if it's a hoax, we can just go on, everybody can keep believing the same old crap they're doing and living in everyday life. But if it is not a hoax, we have to change. We have to realize there's a whole world of existence, spiritually, mentally, and physically, categorically, historically, culturally, anthropologically, biblically.
Well, somebody would have had to have gone to an unbelievable amount of trouble to make it a hoax. I mean, how could it would not have been easily done? It would have been extremely, incredibly expensive.
And hide it in the middle of a cornfield, in the middle of nowhere.
That's where it was found? In the middle of a cornfield?
Well, close to that. I'm not going to say exactly. But something like that. It's just amazing to me, Art. I mean, I know you don't die. You know, near-death experiences, I know all about that stuff. But then all of a sudden, all the cultural histories and the things like in Egypt, it's in America.
So... you really, Dan, you became involved in this with Robert Ghostwolf to as much as you're able to airtime here to verify it.
I got involved with him because when he, Ronnie Mound, said man was in trouble and he needed some help as a friend to go through some broad things.
Uh-huh.
And Ronnie Mound, I said, well, what is all that stuff? Ronnie Mound works in Compassion in Action. He works their butt off in VAs. And that was to command me to do it. And as I watched it and I looked at it, and I watched Robert and I came into it that way, I come to prove it's not true. Because if it is a hoax, I must look at it from that point.
Mm-hmm.
That it's a hoax. And I must do my research and explore it and look at it from that point.
Right.
And disprove it.
Right.
Well, I'm doing a real bad job of that, Art. Because, listen, I send those photos and graphs off to a Celtic study of ancient language.
Yes.
He's funny. I never tell him where it came from. I just ask him the period of time and written in this tablet. And was this? They think the stone is a typical place of it. And I'm getting ready to go to Ireland because I want to see where this quarry is. And this geologist said, since Ireland is so small, he could find the exact location of the quarry.
So you are in the midst of uncovering not just this ancient site, but looking for the rest of them, too.
Well, if I can verify what I, as David Brinkley, know, like in Egypt, and then this Etruscan, and then this Irish piece, and ways that I can, in my own self, know exactly this, then I know there's one. And if I can't get the capstone on, and I know from looking at the things that I saw, if we don't bring this awareness and keep it alive, we're in trouble. And I'd rather people...
Well, if all of this is true, we may be in trouble socially, because I'm not sure that many people are going to be ready to accept this. I mean, they're going to look at this and they're going to go... this, you know, everything I know and everything I believe, my faith tells me this must be a hoax, because if it's not a hoax, then what I thought was true isn't true.
What about everybody else, Art? What about everybody else who, when they look at this, will go, I knew it?
Oh, they'll be
knew
no,
what
sure.
I was believing was
sure.
crazy.
Sure.
See, it's a...
it's a whole new beautiful world that dawns a millennium. Everything is possible. Institutions, religions, and governments are liars to control us. I mean, I watch that stuff. But all of a sudden, here's this event.
Yeah.
And here's an opportunity to be able to look at it. And for all of us, I mean, I want, there's things I want to know about art. It's like just to explore it. And for all of us, maybe, just maybe, just maybe, we don't know everything. God, isn't that terrible?
There's going to be a lot of people very upset about this, though, nevertheless. I know there are, as you point out, there are going to be a lot of people who will say, I knew it. It doesn't surprise me. I always believed this was true. Sure, there will be those people, but there's going to be a lot of other people who are going to be really, really, really upset.
Give them my phone number, Art. And tell them to call me just after I drank that bottle of wine on the full moon. Let me at them. Because I'm going to look at it like you see me do in Egypt and everywhere else. Compassion in action, hospice work, and taking a near-death experience to a place that it can be used in service and helping soldiers. But I also know it, what I've been through in the spiritual places that I'm learning about, that as I go and look at this, this is important.
Well, here's, I think this will satisfy you. I hope it will, Dan. This is the facts that I just got. It says, hey, Art, it's wonderful to hear Daniel again tonight. Please, if you have the time, let him know that I went home to see my parents a couple of weeks ago, took Saved by the Light with me for my dad to read. He's 83, and I believe he's getting ready to leave. He read the book from cover to cover and loved it. It opened up a lot of conversation between us, and we were able to talk about so many things and say so many things that needed saying. I took this journey specifically to say those things to Dad. Bless you, Daniel, for the help you gave us. The unsaid words have all been said, and the love is clear and shining between us. For this incalculable gift, you will always be in my prayers. Aloha.
Jesus Christ. You know, Art, and I, that's what compassion in action is. And did I tell you today, thanks, Art? Because you put it out there, you come and save my life. You know, I got mad at you about that. You know how I hate people to get me up from the dead. And I apologize. But you got me up. And Compassion Action is doing that. And I'm very, very proud.
Yeah, my only complaint is you seem to be doing the best you can to die again.
Why do you always have to be right?
All right, folks. Up to my website you go at www.artbell.com. There has been a major archaeological discovery in Middle America. We've got the photographs of the artifacts. You go look for yourself, and you tell us what we have found. And I shouldn't say we. I don't have a thing to do with it other than, I guess, breaking the news to you. But as you sit through these photographs, if your mind doesn't do a couple of paradigm twists, a sort of a Linda Blair twist, then you're not looking carefully. I'm Art Bell from the High Desert. This is Coast to Coast AM. Went to Egypt when he should not have and wore himself to a frazzle will be with us only through this next segment, and we will continue with Robert Ghostwolf. But we wanted to have Dan on because he was verifying so much of what you're hearing about tonight. Dan, again, thank you for straining to be here. You had a site you wanted to mention to the public, a website?
Yeah, it's just Twilight Brigade.
It's what?
Damien.com. I'm going to finally get me a website, Art.
For those of us who have taken too many blunt objects to the head, could one of you please spell out exactly what is implied by these photographs and what it says to us? Straight out. I mean,
yeah, Robert.
We're not what we were told we were. And we don't necessarily come from where we've been led or manipulated to believe that we come from. That we are much more than that. And the beautiful thing about these pieces and this discovery is that it's hard evidence. It's 3D.
It's here.
We're not talking metaphysical or trying to explain something.
No, it's here.
From a transcription from a pyramid in a Yucatan or a hieroglyphic on a rock that people can say, well, it could be that way or it could be that way. So some of these photographs are just, they're obvious. When I saw them, I just didn't believe them.
Same here.
I was just like, this is absolutely...
That's why I said, how do you know this is not some kind of terrible hoax?
I'm going to find out.
Well, I know you...
Again, I'm going to go step by step, each piece,
right.
Question them, look at it. But to start, the Celtic stuff and the Middle Eastern stuff, specifically the Egyptian pieces, which are like 20 or 30, with those... I can step by step go and create the authenticity of it and know the people who are telling Zahi and his researchers and their studies from the people on the plateau. If they tell us of these pieces and much, what you know and what I know and the pyramids and all that stuff, Art, we have begun to open up everyone's mind and everyone's consciousness.
But what this really says is, if these are authentic, and they certainly appear to be, they're not salted, then if they're really here naturally, then the Egyptian culture, or the Atlantean culture, if you really want to go for it.
Or the American culture.
Is the American culture.
Voila. Welcome home.
Good night, Irene.
Yeah, that's what it says for anybody with too many blunt objects to the head. If you look at these photographs, you're looking at your past, our past, all of us.
And that civilizations existed and come and go, and every so often, they wipe us out.
Yeah,
another one emerges.
The bottom line here is, capstone or not, these ancient civilizations, which may have known how to prevent these cyclical extinctions...
Or to limit them or to focus them in a certain direction.
...were not successful.
Well...
Or else they'd still be here.
Well, people did survive. The story of the epics of Gilgamesh and the Great Flood. And they did care enough to store their data and their information so that one day the events that we would find them again and that the growth in the cycle would begin again. The Earth is growing and it's unfolding in its own universe and what it does. I mean, magnetic shifts and 3 billion planets in just the Milky Way, 4.3 billion planets. It's unfolding, evolving in evolution. But the knowledge of this and that they did this and that I have one I can check myself, then all of a sudden, even as it is fearful, it is a natural cycle. And it is a way that proves to us we have a spiritual commitment here and that this world is unfolded and is not controlled but our wills and our consciousness to understand, and there are still monuments and things that exist to verify it. That is the most exciting stuff. I mean, it's the most exciting stuff I've ever been around. Because here on this earth, it proves so much that I wondered about, and I hear people talk about, but I don't believe all that stuff. I deal with death. And if it's true, and we take it step by step, we do it right, and we report it, and we keep it trusted, and we re-verify it.
American archaeologists are going to totally freak out.
Yeah, I like it when they do that, don't you?
I guess. I mean, they really are going to blow it on this one. Picture number 11 in the pictures that I have numbered, the clear Egyptian picture.
Yes.
Anybody want to take a shot at what we're seeing there? I mean, it's obviously what we think of, I guess I ought to say, as Egyptian. What are we seeing?
Well, it is in the Greek occupation, when the Greeks came in the Ptolemy era, after Alexander the Great conquered Egypt.
Yes.
They changed the design of how people were drawn. That's how you would know that. Okay, this I'm pretty sure, because they hold a key of life and the scepter of the combination of upper and lower Egypt.
Is that what that is, the key of life? That's
the ankh.
Right.
And then the rod is a serpent combining upper and lower periods.
Yes.
I would say it was Ptah, one of the four gods, symbolizing Amun-Ra. The hieroglyphics, I'm not really sure about it, because when you go from a Ptolemite drawing, the Greeks added a bunch of their own symbolism to relate over the top of naturally drawn Egyptians from the dynasties back. And so, looking at that, what it is a celebration of fertility and a time and a hieroglyphics and how this thing would be put in place, usually in a tomb or something like that. The how they write out in hieroglyphics the history of their life.
Mm-hmm.
This would be a part of what would be on the other side, left and right, would tell me what the story was. But this is the coming to. If they hold the key of life, the serpent of the upper and lower Nile, they have the female head. That means it's fertility, and it's in service to giving the land and royalty. Now, the hieroglyphics is saying it's only a bunch of symbols because there's a sentence before and a structure after it. But it is, I am the celebration of. And it's divining something. So it's at least 2,000 years old.
Dan, how do you imagine something like this would come out of American soil, please?
I would imagine that looking at all the histories, looking at the myths and the legends, that these chambers and these places of knowledge were put in place so that when we emerge to a certain level of consciousness, we would be aware of them, like Casey says, like all the predictions that are there, that are Nostradamus, or especially Native Nations, the Hopis. And look at just what I went through, Art. We just finished box 4 and 5 of where Russia is. So box 7 is the environment.
Yeah.
The environmental religion. Okay?
Then who...
Hold on a second, Art. Can I just say this?
Yeah.
The environmental religion, and there would be a Russian that would come forth and create almost a religion. Well, the other day I saw Gorbachev on CNN talking about pollution and his green cross to save the world's environment. So I check into the boxes of knowledge, and like I've always said, when we would truly know the war, the place of transition in time had come, based on the things that I saw, the war would be over water. In the Middle East, it wouldn't be over anything but water.
Sure.
Box 4 and 5. And you know, you've been hearing that crap forever, and I've been saying it for 20 years. Yesterday's paper. Israel is suffering its worst drought in 160 years.
Mm-hmm.
They have cut off 50% of the water going to the West Bank, and they're trying to figure out how to truck water for drinking.
Oh, the weather is... Dan, the weather is changing.
The drought.
Not a little bit. It's changing a lot. We are now experiencing in the middle of a global climate change. Period.
Sounds like a good time to bring on an environmental religion. If there were people who knew these ancient traditions, properties, and prophecies, the same that know that maybe there is extraterrestrial life, sure it'd be a good time to bring on an environmental religion and blame it on everything that we're doing, as opposed to really knowing that it is unfolding, the changes coming, the storms, and what happens when these eras come that you just wrote about with your book with Whitley.
Yeah.
No. So, golly, Art.
Then who are, you know, talking about indigenous people is kind of a misnomer, period, isn't it? I mean, what's indigenous?
That's what we're finding out. That's what this is all about. That's what we're finding out, is who were the indigenous people.
Well, in America, we say the American Native. We say indigenous, original to this land, right? Well,
it sure took a lot of vacations and brought home a lot of great treasures from about 25 countries when they were indigenous here.
They did it with canoes, too.
Yeah.
Before Christ at that.
Yeah, they probably swam over there. So what it really means is a bunch of Native Nation people discovered us.
Well, I'm telling you, this is not going to go down well in a lot of places. It just isn't. Robert, when, if ever, are you going to make public the location of these artifacts?
When we go into the actual other chambers. Right now we're going through rubble. And then I think that one of the things we're going to do is bring you in there with a camera.
I'd love it. You know there are more chambers already?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
How? How do you know that?
Two places.
We have this wonderful thing today called technology.
Yes.
like what we were trying to get going in Miami to find out where the rest of the locations were.
Right.
And with the various technology that we have, thanks to NASA.
We found some stuff like, Zahi said, anomalies. Remember when we were talking about the chamber in Egypt, Art?
Yes.
And he says this kind of equipment that used either infrared or sonar sound looking for oil deposits.
Yes.
And they said it was just an anomaly.
Yes.
And some Japanese were over there doing it. The Japanese, they don't believe in anomalies. They will figure out exactly what it is. Well, when you try it in America, you get to see what it is.
So you'd be willing at some point to let me come in there with cameras?
Absolutely.
Well, my suggestion is this, Art. We go step by step. It's real. I don't have to go to Egypt, China, or anywhere. I can just explore this one right here and report on it. And just go step by step, and at some point in it, create that. Create a television show or explore it. But what I liked about Robert... He didn't go after that. Some people had tried to do these kinds of things in other places. And to glorify it and just to rape it and pillage it and get on the air and make themselves famous in what they're doing. Instead of keeping to the spiritual tradition, do it step by step and do it honorably. Look at it honestly and report back and protect it.
Well, the both of you know about forbidden archaeology, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
In other words, there are a lot of archaeological finds that don't fit into the paradigms of those who tell us what the world has been. And when they find these things, inevitably, they lock them up in the back of museums and refuse to allow them to be seen, refuse to talk about them, refuse to acknowledge they even exist.
And destroy the whole careers of those people who discover them.
That's fact.
Maybe even kill some of them.
That's a fact, too.
So now you figured out how I decided to die, aren't I couldn't get the capstone on the pyramid, and if it really worked, it shut down every computer system, satellite, telephones, and they could really blame the Y2K on the pyramid then.
Yeah, we're worried about all that stuff coming up.
I believed it was going to happen. I believe it would create such a magnetic flux, especially in scalar or elliptic wave, that the damage it would do in Y2K.
You and I both know Zahi. Could you describe for me his demeanor in losing the battle with regard to the capstone? How's Zahi doing? Is he old?
Mad as hell.
He's mad as hell?
Hey, see, Art, we've always thought it was Zahi, you know? And even I have some suspicions about stuff. Because I know him. I've been going there 26 years. And I saw him fight. The president couldn't get it done. Somebody knows something, Art. And then all of a sudden, all those conspiracies and all that stuff that you and I worked really hard with Graham and Robert.
Yep.
Yeah, stop being children. Let's look at it, myth or not.
I guess we've got to get these photographs to Graham and Robert soon, if they don't already have them, if they haven't been consulted. Have they been yet?
Nope.
No.
Nobody's going to
I can't even imagine what they're going to say.
Well, we'll certainly give them a chance. But I'm going to verify two or three of the pieces. I'm going to make sure, just from my own way of looking at it, and verify it for myself, using Zach, the world's most famous archaeologist and Egyptologist on the Giza Plateau, another guy in Ireland, a couple of other people that Robert have.
Can't we also carbon date the adjacent ground?
Oh, yeah, but you could use, you could do a geology survey. You could use radium depletion. And you could also, you know, there's even the DNA. I mean, we can go layer by layer. And just do it right. It just takes a little time because we don't have all that giant money. And the people you would normally go to raise money for that kind of stuff are universities or film companies.
Well, film companies, now there's a possibility. I mean, this is the kind of thing that some network would jump on and Charlton Heston would narrate and, you know, all that sort of thing.
And they would make it thrill a minute, 18 to 48.
And would they ever get the full knowledge? That's the point here.
I doubt it.
The point here is that there's an incredible message here. There's an incredible amount of information that has to be brought out at this time.
So Robert, other than yourself and Danion, how many people know about this find, where it is, and the details about it? How many people know?
Just a handful.
Like a half dozen people, maybe?
Maybe less.
All right. We're about to end the segment, and Dan is going to go to bed and try to stay alive.
I really appreciate it.
Like
Daniel said, you know, when I brought it to him, I said, look at this jigsaw puzzle. What are we looking at? And we realize we have to do this one step at a time.
Yeah, because I think it's the most fantastic thing I've ever seen. And it's here. And each time I look at it, and I go and look and do my research, because I'm, you know, reasonably knowledgeable, and I've been in 81 countries, and I can see and identify it as soon as Robert showed it. He said, how do you know each of the languages and where it came from, Etruscan? Well, I pay attention to that stuff.
Yeah, I know.
And here comes the chance to go step by step and to look at it. It is absolutely phenomenal. And to do it a little at a time, I don't want to do it. Or I know if it's as powerful as it is, every control system would be put in place. A university would put it in some shelf somewhere shut it out.
I know.
Or a company would play it off as something, or they would be limited in being able to use it. But I don't think they can do that to Art Bell.
No.
Not, I think that it can be streamed on good as digital could be, or some way radio to the cameras that you have. I mean, my mind doesn't move all into that kind of stuff. I do television, and I write stuff for them, and I help create the Egyptian thing. And, you know, I'm always in the background trying to create spiritual awareness. But I think that there is a way to do that, just step by step, as grown men.
All right, that's the way we'll
do this stuff.
Dan, that's exactly the way we'll take it, step by step.
Scientifically, the best we know, and as I go on, I'd like to tell everybody that's art people and out there, I love them. I thank them for their prayers. I thank them for caring about me, and happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, safe Rosh Hashanah, and Merry Christmas.
Good night, Dan.
Good night, Art.
Robert, stay
Robert.
Right there, and we'll be right back. All right. You've got to see these photographs, and when you do, you've got to scratch your head for a while, and then send me some email if you want. Tell me what you think, because I don't know what to think.
I'm in theaters, right? Still thinking about that. And go to a bookstore. And now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring Robert Ghostwolf back, who has made this incredible, just absolutely incredible discovery. There almost are not words for it, but there are a couple. Let me first promo what he's got. And he's got a couple of recent publications that you're going to love. They're absolutely beautiful. Through the Eyes of the Shaman is one, and Days of Destiny is the other. Now, both of these, Days of Destiny, will describe this discovery. And I guess a lot of the photographs, Robert, that are on the website are in Days of Destiny?
Yes, they will be there. And what Days of Destiny is something that you've always been asking me, which is Days of Destiny is the total revealing of the seventh thunder and what it's about.
Oh.
The final drama.
Final drama. You know, I've got a feeling the final drama, as far as we're concerned, is pretty close. What's the 800 number for orders?
That 800 number is 800-646-770.
No, wait a minute. You're missing a number. 646-7770.
Three sevens
and a zero.
And the other number, the fax line, is 1-888
right
690-3970.
Okay. Both of these are available, like, right now.
Yeah, and if they order them through us, they get an autographed copy.
Oh.
And they're doing all sorts of crazy things down there. I don't know. They're giving everything away down there because it's Christmas.
I've got a couple of questions, then we're going to go to the phones.
Go ahead.
Could these... This is from Plano, Texas, Dave. And it's as good a question as any, considering what we're talking about tonight, the impossibility of it all. Could these artifacts of Robert Ghostwolf's digs be evidence of time travel?
I'm going to say that at this point, there's some things that we have not put up here. I mean, like I said, we have over 200 artifacts that I've seen. I have close to 2,000 photographs. There are things there that indicate that that could be a total probability. And then beyond that, we go into a personal understanding, which is that it's totally probable because it happened.
You know, it reminds me of the beginning of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. You remember they're out in the desert, middle of the desert, and the airplanes that disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle are all sitting there brand new with the gas in them. And it's just unbelievable. All right, here's one more. Art, I just wanted to say that it's a really great show tonight, great topic. Wondering if you were aware that the timeline that Robert and your guests are talking about with regard to these artifacts is the same basic timeline that the Book of Mormon is set in. The Book of Mormon also says that these people wrote in a form of revised Egyptian. Is it possible that Joseph Smith was indeed a prophet and the Book of Mormon is all true? I'd like to hear you and your guests discuss this issue. Has it been brought up to you?
It's been brought up to me several times. I am not at all qualified to be an expert on that book. From what I understand, and people who I have discussed this with, it's an absolute affirmation as to the information in the book, as far as the historical records. As far as accuracy, again, I'm not the expert to speak about that.
Okay.
But as you go through what we have here, just on the site, yes, it talks about everything from the Ark of the Covenant to the priesthood of Aaron, who was Moses' brother. It talks about how it came here. We have a picture on one of those stones, which is obviously the Ark of the Covenant. Next to it, we have a Seal of Solomon.
What number is that? Can you tell me offhand?
I have to go down and see. Just give me a...
I can make my guess, but I'd rather have you tell me. I've got laser copies of the photographs that are up on the website.
We're going to 23. It's the Ark of the Covenant.
23.
And I think next to it I have a on the website. And Keith put it up on yours. There's a artist image of what the Ark of the Covenant looks like.
Boy, that does look like the Ark of the Covenant.
Mm-hmm.
Holy moly. Who did all of the photography and scanning of all of these?
The other associates that I'm involved with in this dig.
Somebody did some really good work.
Yeah, they did.
I mean,
it's been a tremendous jigsaw puzzle putting this together. And it's also been quite an interesting drama.
I bet it has. I don't even know how you consider going public about with all this.
That was Danion.
Dan thought you should.
Danion said, Robert, it's time to come out with this. And when he was in Egypt and he called me back, and I think that's when he contacted you, he got the affirmations that he needed from Saeed, who was probably looking for me at this very moment.
Figuring that you're a thief.
That I took this stuff from Egypt.
Yeah. Yeah, the only problem is it's not just from Egypt, but there's some of this obviously is Egyptian. I mean, there's no question about it, period.
Oh, absolutely. And it's absolutely from the era of Ptolemy, which would be the whole line that came from Cleopatra and came when the Greek influence came in.
Where do you go now with regard to investigation? In other words, you've got to do dating, carbon dating, and the other work.
We're doing carbon dating. We're doing translations. We have some pieces, photographs of some pieces off right now to the University of Jerusalem.
Really?
We've brought in some people who were authorities on the Kabbalah, which is where some of the explanations that are up on your site, I don't know if we got them up on our site yet, but it's where some of those explanations came from, because in some of the, especially the Hebrew stones, there's a discrepancy as to whether they're speaking about Yeshua ben Joseph, which would be Jesus the Christ, or they're speaking about Moses, or perhaps his brother Aaron. And there's one stone in there in particular. Where it's obvious what it is. I mean, as we come down to, I believe, number 16.
Got it.
Where you, this is, I don't know if this is a tomb, if it's supposed to be his tomb, or if it's supposed to be the Dome on the Rock in Israel. And we will notice that on both sides of that, you have a symbol of two serpents. One on the left is kind of hard to make out. It's been worn away.
It is. We could have used a little more light in this photograph.
But the one on the right, you can see this encryption of the serpent, and in the serpent's mouth is a ball. Now, that is interpreted various ways. Some say it's the serpent energy devouring the earth. But if we go down to the last picture, which is 26, which is a tablet, there's a good depiction of that. And I have there an example of a Mayan glyph that speaks of the same thing. Now, what this means in... It's repeated over and over and over.
I see the serpent.
Just as there are certain symbols that are over and over and over, which is a seal. It's some sort of a seal. It's some sort of a cartouche saying this, and it's the same symbols. It's the same language. I have not had time to decipher these yet because Daniel picked them out with me. We said, let's use these. But that symbol represents not a reptile eating the earth. What it represents is the pharaonic line, the royal bloodlines. And as we go through various cultures, that symbol is used. So what they're talking about there is something of monumental importance. According to someone, there is obviously a priest of the royal bloodline. So we're getting into the whole Mesa, the messianic line, the royal bloodline of Egypt, which later became the royal bloodline of Israel. And that brings us to, which is what brought me to this in the first place, was the affirmation that the Anunnaki, the old ones, were here.
Oh, you really mean the really old ones?
The really old ones. And there's the Hebrew transcriptions and pieces that we found are just incredible. There's just a lot of them. And you'll see there on one page, I think it's number 8, we have a picture of a menorah.
Right.
And what I did next to it was put an example of a menorah that just appeared in England, which is somebody trying to tell us something?
Oh,
why
yes.
Would that appear there and this appear here and they're identical?
I don't know.
The other thing is that the symbols on a lot of the Hebrew stones seem to indicate that they come from Africa.
This just can't be.
It's pretty mind-boggling.
It just can't be. Number 24.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't know better, I'd say I'm looking at some sort of sailing ship or depiction.
Well, if you look at number 24, you'll also notice that it's several layers high.
Yes.
So that's why it's indicating that this is a very large ship.
Yeah.
And it's carrying a lot of things in it.
Again, impossible.
Very different than the picture of the ship on number 17. Now, number 17 is very interesting. Again, on the sails are the symbols that are what I'm calling the cartouche, because it repeats over and over on these pictures. And it is, the ship is not a Viking ship.
No.
This is from the Egyptian period.
And there's a cross.
There's a cross. There's also the eye on the right hand side of that ship. I don't know if that symbolizes that it was a CBS expedition.
Brother.
But there's the eye, and then what you have on the other side is a pyramid. And above the pyramid you have the 8-pointed star, which indicates that the calculations on both sides, you'll see calendar staffs, and it's telling us to go to the Venus calendar, to use the Venus calendar, which is used both in the Chaldean determinations of time and the Mayan. Most of the prophecies that come from the Mayan, that come from Quetzalcoatl, come from the Venus calendar and how we tell the dates of when things are going to happen in relation to the present calendar, which we're using the Gregorian calendar. It's been proven to be a little more accurate because it works on the cycles of the universe. It works on the cycles of the Earth, which is so astonishing. When I was listening to you talking about your book with Whitley, which is...
Yeah, it all fits
right. You're right on target.
Yeah.
And it's coming, it's going to start right from that area. The storms, the weather, and then it's going to move.
Well, it's well underway. I mean, you're the one who brought the Hopi to me. It was an arduous show. We did a translation, but they said it already has begun. And that was on the heels of the quickening that I wrote, and now Superstorm, which is... It's really going to scare a lot of people.
Well,
I guess maybe we ought not be scared. Should we be scared of these changes, or simply, comfortable with them, understanding that we cannot change what is to be?
Well, if you're going to go through a hurricane, there's nothing you can do but go through it. What we know is coming is that how do Earth changes begin? And I think that a lot of people are focusing on some sort of biblical occurrence, so to speak, a Cecil B. DeMille kind of situation, which, ironically, we're getting more verification has occurred here and probably most likely will occur again.
Oh, I think the changes, they're out there happening right now. All right, we're going to pause here at the bottom of the hour, and when we come back, I promise we will open the phone lines. Absolutely inexplicable what Robert has discovered in the middle of a field, in the middle of America, under the ground, is like a secret place in time. We'll be right back. All right, back now to Robert Goldwolf. And Robert... and see what we come up with. There should be a lot of startled people out there, not everybody with a computer, though. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Robert Goldwolf. Hello.
Hi, Art. Hi, Robert. This is Brad over here in Poulsbo, Washington.
Yes, sir.
Listening to you on Como 1000.
Of course.
Please forgive it. I'm kind of hyperkinetic tonight. The question I have, if I can get it all coherent and out here, is, given all this evidence that has been collected just recently here in the last 100 years or so, and all of the anachronisms, just drop them, forget the anachronisms, forget the controversies, does it really seem strange that people are discovering that these sites could be megalithic machines? And if so, and you take that, they're on Mars, they're on the Moon, there may be other places here on the Earth, there's several others.
Right.
I look at all this and I'm saying, this is like a big picture puzzle. And You know, like as for those megalithic machines, you know, like, wouldn't they be described as to apparent function? I mean, like, if wouldn't they give their operators some contact with the matter of which they're made out of and the planet's made out of? And wouldn't all the animals and plants be recorded in the energy streams here? I mean, after all, what is DNA for except it's a material expression of an idea? Any comment?
Robert?
I like that explanation. That's really what DNA is. It's a material manifestation of an idea which can carry the consciousness, it carries the intelligence, the knowledge of. And I think that all of that is part of what a lot of us are concerned about as we're finding out more. You know, we're in the kindergarten stages of finding these things out. The prophecies do tell us that in the latter days of the end times, these discoveries would be made and the things that were hidden would be revealed so that we would know. And being we are in that kindergarten stage of understanding, like, there is a lot more to this, and that they are on global grids in precise locations, and that they do have functions, even though we have yet to discover what all of those functions are, they could be the very thing that's holding the consciousness of this planet together. If all we are is an idea, then what happens if that link is destroyed? You see?
Yes. And
then we rip apart a dream, we rip apart our reality, and then how do we express? You see?
Well, you know, there's sites all over the earth. There's that Black Pyramid in India, and there's the Stonehenge down south that you and Richard Hoagland helped bring the consciousness of America toward. You know, but in ancient sites, right here in America, the Amerindians have a site that they never speak about much, but it's looked at from the air. It's where the sperm meets the gamete at the Ohio Mound. That is just striking from the air. You know, it is as if matter is descending into energy, you know, or vice versa.
Yeah, it is an amazing place. I've been over that area.
All right, sir. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for the contribution. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert Ghostwolf.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, I'm in Kansas City.
All right.
I was curious to know if either one of you have ever heard of a visionary named Mary Summerrain.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Okay, well, I was kind of blown away with what's been on tonight, because about 4 or 5 years ago, she wrote a book called The Seventh Mesa, and the premise of the book is what you have discovered. And it really kind of floored me when I've been listening to you. And I'm a comparatively new listener. I've only been listening to you, Art, for about, maybe 2 weeks.
Well, you are new. I think one of the other things that she focused on in her books from her teacher, No Eyes,
yeah,
was the rising of the phoenix.
Yes, yes.
And what the rising of the phoenix is the consciousness that is now awakening.
Right, and she also
you're looking at these things now and understanding what they really mean.
Sorry? I didn't hear that.
We are now seeing these things. They're being revealed, and we are at a state of consciousness where we can accept what they really mean.
Right. She said there would be a time for that in one in her books. I was just amazed, though. I was very curious to know whether either one of you had ever either talked to her or you know, read her stuff. Evidently you have, of course, since you know, but...
Robert, have you spoken to her?
I have not personally spoken to Mary Summerrain. I've read her earlier books. I have not read her later books.
The last book that I read that I don't know what she's done since 96, but it was called Visitation. And it was the Archangel came down and was giving her stuff about how we consciously could change some of the things that were going to happen, some of the earth changes that,
absolutely,
you know, have an effect on them. And do you have any comment about that?
Well, actually, let's stretch that out a little bit. Robert, you said the seventh thunder is about upon us.
It's on us.
It's on us. What exactly is the seventh thunder?
The seventh thunder, in a nutshell, if I was to compress repress it. What it means is that, one, we will not only remember who we are, we will have evidence of who we are that will kick that memory into gear within our DNA. The other part of the seventh thunder has got to do with that's when we return as a race, as a global race, as we once were, to a galactic universe. And there are many, many pieces in here that make, not in the, what we have up yet, but there are pieces that make reference to that and that make reference to the Star Nations.
I wonder if this is knowledge that each civilization has stumbled into just prior to the need for it.
There's a more than a coincidence to that statement, because that seems to be almost the way it appears. It's like you have this great zenith of consciousness and awareness, and then all of a sudden, as you look at the cycles of history of civilizations linearly, then all of a sudden they're gone. You know, it's like the Maya. They had this incredible cosmic knowledge, and all of a sudden, their knowledge was gone. Not the people. The people are very much alive, and that culture and that understanding is going through its own rebirthing process right now. But also, as you go through different places in the world, we see that we reach a great zenith of knowingness, a great zenith of consciousness and an understanding, and we became spiritual, if you want to use the word, and realizing the balance between the two, and then all of a sudden they're gone. And all we have is, like what we're looking at, records.
But that must mean, to date, although many civilizations may have come close to preventing what otherwise is going to occur, they didn't quite make it.
There's a flaw in the DNA. That's what I try to talk about through the eye of the shaman, how to overcome that. We seem to slip into the self-destructive mode. And I think that what's going on in the world today, with everybody backbiting and attacking everybody, and politicians are lying, I mean, it's out of control. And we're slipping into that cycle, and these things are coming up, these revelations are coming up out of the ground to tell us, don't make the same mistakes. You know, you said a question earlier, should we be afraid of what's coming?
Well, I would like to be an optimist, but I see us well down the road of the very same mistake.
Unfortunately, I think on the whole, I agree with you.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway.
Maybe we can wake a couple of people up.
Maybe. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert Ghostwolf. Hi.
Hi there. How you doing, Art?
All right.
A couple things. First, congratulations on the success of your book. It's been really good.
Oh, it's incredible.
It sounds like it's awesome. I haven't got it yet, but I plan to pick it up. A couple things, a question and a comment. I'll get to the question first. Kind of sounds like you found a time capsule here, and one thing I was wondering is, do you think that possibly or maybe that you might actually find a physical being where you're currently digging?
Now there is a question.
Let's put it this way, at this point, it's highly probable.
Highly probable?
I'll say that now.
Terrific. That would be an excellent find. And here, I'm in the Clemente area of Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening to you on 77 KOB.
Yes, sir.
And a very spiritual area out here. And it seems like that in every portion of like a religion or some kind of sect, or, you know, there's always a missing link that, you know, fails to tie everything together really tight. And it seems like this might actually be something that could tie almost all of those things together in a way of all different parts of religions and, you know, from every part of the country here on our earth. And what do you think about that? Do you think this could actually tie many things like, you know, Catholicism to, you know, Muslims and stuff like that? Do you think it has that kind of an impact?
Daniel and I talked extensively about that. Again, we're only looking at a you know, teaspoon of what we are looking at in the whole with what we found, and we haven't even gone into the major excavation yet. But yes, it does do that, and I think that that ramification of that would have to do that. We're all going to have to do some mind changing here. We're going to have to look at things through another eye. And maybe that's, you know, like Art said, that's going to get a lot of people upset.
Yeah.
The truth is, it doesn't always come sugar sugar-coated. And when what we're looking at right here is a global representation of different cultures. I mean, we've got African figures, we've got Sumerian figures, we've got ancient Hebrew, we've got Egyptian, we've got Roman, we've got Mayan, we've got Native American, and they're all tied together in this time capsule is a good word. And that's what these 12 sacred sites were. And they're not unknown. As a matter of fact, there's been a lot that's gone on with people trying to bring that information out. As I said in the beginning of the show, I've done a lot of work with Speaking Wind on this. These sites are there. The time capsules is a good word for it. They're there, so we would have the records.
Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you guys are on your way to hitting something big there, and thanks for letting me on the program tonight, Art.
All right, sir.
Continued success, and hello,
Thank
Clem.
You. Thank you. All right. And if all of you, I recommend, get to one of the two websites, mine, www.artbell.com or wolflodge.org. That's wolflodge.org.
The sites are dragging.
Yeah, they're dragging slowly, but there is a long weekend ahead. And the holidays are coming, so the photographs will remain. Don't panic if you cannot get through. Just keep trying, and you will make it eventually. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Robert Ghost Wolf. Hi.
Hi, this is William in Great Falls, Montana.
Yes, William.
I've been a student of this sort of thing since the early 50s when I had a professor in college that clued me into it. Evidence then of a medallion of Evil Meredith, son of Nebuchadnezzar, between the Hopi places in Mexico City, and I believe that the Quetzalcoatl is no other person than Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, of the Chaldeans himself. My question to you is, are you familiar with Barry Feld, marine biologist at Harvard? He used to be, anyway. I used to have a book by him, America B.C., and he goes into the ships of Tarshish, the ships of the he translated some Ogham of the Celts, the ships of the Celts, the tall ships with the sails.
And there's a lot of that in America.
Yeah, and he showed how the Phoenicians were. There's one dock in New England that had inscription on it. This is this for the ships of Phoenicia. And he felt that the Carthaginians were active in their trade down in the Oklahoma-Arkansas area, and the Phoenicians were more up in Minnesota and Ohio there. Are you familiar with his work?
I'm not familiar with his work, but I am familiar with the information that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. I figured you probably
and in,
were.
In Days of Destiny, I go into a lot of that with actual pictures.
Yeah.
And deciphering of what those rock drawings are actually saying.
Yeah, in his book, he had the pictures of the phalluses and the caves and the Mother Earth goddess and that. But I have another thought that you might be interested in on the Anastasi or the ancient ones.
Yes.
I believe that they are Cain and the descendants of Cain, which God said in the Bible would be the teachers and instructors of all the scientific advancements on the earth. Had you considered that?
Very much so.
All right. Listen, I've got a couple of things I want to get in here. One, we're approaching an hour where I always give my guests a choice to either continue for another hour if you've got it in you, or head off to bed if you are exhausted.
I think we can go for another hour.
Okay, good. Another is, doesn't this make the term indigenous kind of relative? A very relative term.
I think, as they say in Missouri, you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. So how will the indigenous people in America, relatively speaking, the contemporary term, be likely to accept this kind of evidence? Not very well.
You know, well, it depends on like what level you're talking to, what level of knowledge you're addressing. And like I said, if we, you know, indigenous to America, well, there's North America, there's South America. And if you go to the Mayan, they always talk about Quetzalcoatl, the white-bearded god that would come back from the east.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about Kukulkan, all of these gods that we call gods, well, would they not call us gods? I saw the movie The Gods Must Be Crazy when they dropped the Coke bottle in the jungle.
Yes.
So we would be referred to as the gods, but there's all this referral to the white-bearded gods that came, that brought this technology, that came from the stars or came from the east. You know, there's not enough time in the program to go into it in detail now, but to hit the highlights of it. And this not only exists there, it exists with the Hopi. And it exists with the ancient writings that are still intact. Unfortunately, the Puan, the mound builders, are not here to carry on their knowledge, but that knowledge is written. And the symbolisms that we're looking at in many of those situations are multicultural. I mean, you can see the same symbol in Israel. You can
Absolutely.
See the same symbol in Egypt. You see the same symbol in Nigeria.
I know they're startling. Robert, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. I want to tell the audience, tomorrow night, you've asked for it, so you get it. Raleigh James will be here again tomorrow night. I'm Art Bell. Stay right where you are.
Guess there's no use in hanging around. Guess I'll get dressed and do the town. I'll find some crowded avenue.
Here's a fax for you that did get through. What does Robert think about Native American fighting going on now in the courts to stop anyone from doing any more testing or further digging at the Kennewick Man site? How can we prove that pre-Columbian visitors really did come here if we can't investigate and test the hypothesis and discoveries? It's from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Well, that's like a paradoxical dilemma, isn't it?
Yes.
It's we have to study these things. We have this hunger that lives inside of us to find out who we are and where we came from and how we got here and what we are made of. I think that the main argument is, from my side of the line, as an individual who's very intimately involved in this in my life, is that these sites have to be preserved. They can't just be looted. And I think that that's been the history of it. It's been the history for 500 years here in this hemisphere, and pretty much the rest of the world. I think that we have to keep them contained, and that we have to make this information available to everyone, because everyone has the right to know.
Well, if everyone knew where it was right now, number one, it would be looted, as you just pointed out. But number two, wouldn't there likely be indigenous peoples or our own government or any number of organizations that would attempt to stop it cold?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I would also add that sometimes they'll use any measure they have to stop it.
I know. I just thought I'd bring that up so people understand why we're not telling them where it is. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert Ghostwolf. Hi.
Hello there.
Hi.
How are you guys doing today?
All right.
And congratulations, Art, on your book.
Thank you.
I was just curious and wondering, when will this be news, like on CNN, when will we start hearing about this, or will we?
You mean what we're discussing tonight?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good question. In other words, when will it hit the mainstream media? Well, a good question. Robert?
Maybe over the next few months, when the wet weather allows, and we can go in and do the proper excavations. And I think I mentioned earlier, one of the things that Banyan and I wanted to do is to bring Art down there just because he has to be there.
Oh, I'll come. But I'm me. Now, there's CNN, and there's the various networks, and there's...
We haven't brought it out to that point yet because it's really not at that stage.
Well, they're going to see this, and they're going to go berserk, and they're going to want information. They're going to want to talk to you.
Well, did you ever try to change Daniel's mind about something?
We don't need to talk about that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Robert Ghostwolf. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Hi, Robert.
Hello.
This is Barb from Missoula.
Okay.
And I was wondering, first, I've got a couple of questions, but first of all, the bloodline that you spoke of, Robert, would that have anything to do with Christ, the Christ bloodline?
Yes, it does.
It does. Okay. Well, as I'm saying, I call from Missoula here, so I'm kind of your neighbor. But I know some friends of mine, a group, was trying to get a hold of you at one point anyway. And I was wondering, does any of this come from or has any relation to the Baha'is?
No.
No.
No, it doesn't.
Okay. And just one last question here. I was wondering about the...
I mean, not that I know of.
Oh, okay. Okay. I was wondering about the depth of this
Well, that's a good question. Very, very good question.
What do you mean by the depth?
In other words,
depth?
Physical depth. In other words, how far down did you begin discovering these artifacts? And was it an accident? Can you tell us the manner of discovery? Was it a farmer out in the middle of his field plowing away?
A farmer out in the middle of the field. I will say this much at this point, is that some of these chambers are 170 feet below the ground, maybe.
Wow. Wow.
And it's like a catacomb situation. So it's not just one, it's multiple.
That is incredible. That is...
So this is absolutely deliberate.
Oh, sure.
I mean, this wasn't just something that they covered over in a scurry with rocks and dirt. This is a deliberate undertaking with a specific purpose. That's what we have determined so far. It's like when I was back doing the Colorado thing, and it was like, it's great to find these phenomena, but, like, is there an indication of an actual intelligence, of a deliberate plan? Is there mathematics? Is there something laid out here? And from everything that we have... done with our testing and our sonar and our infrared, we can absolutely say this is not an accident.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Robert, Ghost Wolf, and Art Bell. Good morning.
Yes, Art. I really love this show. You do a great job. And
thank you.
And Robert, this is a really interesting subject tonight.
Thank you.
You mentioned that there's a possible 12 sites. Is that in like a localized area, do you think, or is it more regional?
North America and South America.
I see, I see.
The Americas.
I see.
You call the Americas, yes.
Yeah. I see, okay. Well, are they, is there a map of some sort that you've discovered so far, or?
Yes.
Or going back to an actual map?
There's a map.
Really?
Well, the reason I asked,
it's verbal. Although some indications in some of the locations that we went to verify the message, the written message, which we had to translate from Spanish originally, in certain locations there were maps that indicated where the other location was. Am I being clear with that?
Yes.
In other words, if we found out that one location was in a specific place and we would go there, it would tell us that there was another place here, and it all worked out with the written message. So it affirmed what was being said in verse, and usually this was carved in stone. And the native people would say, carved in the living rock. That's where the message is put.
I see.
So it would endure.
I see. Well, when I was
on the air with Robert Ghostwolf. Hello.
Yeah, well, hello. Good morning, Robert. This is Dan in Virginia. There are two questions I wanted to ask you. Do you have a sense of what the purpose of the Ark of the Covenant is?
Hmm. Do I have a sense?
Yeah.
Yes, I have a sense. But I have to apologize because I'm not a biblical scholar, so I don't know what the Academician translation is. But the Ark of the Covenant was a receiver and a transducer. It moved light frequency, which we could interpret as a laser or a laser-type beam, but it worked on a whole different principle, something that we call scalar wave.
Okay.
And also in the stories of the Ark of the Covenant, there are various references here and there where they speak of two. and one of those is believed to be here.
That's what I was getting to.
Ah.
I think you may have...
No, I don't know if it's in here.
Yep.
We haven't gotten that far yet.
Yep.
But that's, you never know.
My second.
But if it is, I'm going to send Art in first.
Yeah, right.
My second question is, 2.5 years ago, when you were showing your amulet...
Yes.
Okay. I'd just gotten back from the Philippines, mm-hmm. and had someone scan it and send you a disc.
Oh, yeah.
That you could take a look at it.
Ironically similar.
Yeah.
Very similar.
And I found that in a sacred cave in the Philippines, and there's all kinds of things that were there.
Write to me again so we can contact on that.
Okay. I'll do that.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Art.
Thank you, and take care. East of the Rockies, I think we have time. You're on the air with Robert Ghostwolf.
Good morning. You guys are making us happy by having a good show.
Well, I'm glad. Where are you?
I'm calling from Madison, Wisconsin.
Yes, sir.
I have a tiny question. Suom and Suomalaiset and Enenakiet, the Anunnaki and the Samsuman mentioned in Genesis.
Yes.
Could they be the pale ones? Were there American Native Indians who were pale-faced, rather light pigmented? There was a famous Indian wrestler who used to maintain that there were white Indians once upon a time in Montana and around Winnipeg.
All right. You know anything about that, Robert?
Yes.
What do you know?
At great risk to my personal being. There were many of these tail beings here. And I'm going to say, from what I have discovered and talked about with elders, and this is my life, this is what I do. And we seem to see that there's two periods, one about 800 years ago, and one possibly 1,200 years ago, where there was tremendous evidences of genocides that took place here, mass burial grounds. Possibly because of the stories, which were much more intact in everybody's consciousness then, because the civilizations weren't destroyed, the people weren't destroyed, the consciousness wasn't destroyed. I mean, when Columbus came over, we lost whole races within a matter of a few years because
right.
of disease.
Very quickly.
But, yes, and that their fear was that what would come, because the pale ones would come from across the water and bring this great destruction, that this is the reason why these genocides happened then.
All right. Robert, hold it right there. We'll be right back. Robert Ghostwolf, it's been a very long time since we've had him on the air. Robert, welcome back.
How's it going?
Well, it's going great.
Did you see picture 18?
Let's see, picture 18. Let's see, people are hitting the websites like crazy.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, this is going to shake up the world. It's going to take
me a minute. Maybe it needs a shaking.
Yeah, maybe it needs shaking. It's going to take me a minute to find 18. 17.
I mean 19.
19. Got it right in front of me. Oh, yeah. We were talking about that earlier. That's the one with the cross,
mm-hmm.
along with so much more.
So much more. Reminds me of what our guest was speaking about in New Mexico.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
It's going to be real hard for people to realize that it's all one thing, isn't it?
Yeah, you know what's going to happen? You're going to really get attacked. You know, I can see from all of this... this presentation, you're going to get attacked, Robert. I guarantee it.
No, I'm not new to that.
I know. But this is going to shake
like
the world.
Like you said, we had to get it out.
Yeah, that's right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Robert Ghostwolf. Hi.
Oh, am I on?
Yes.
Okay, this is John calling from Fort Collins, Colorado.
Hi, John.
I don't know if Robert's aware of this particular site, but if he is, he might be able to tell me a little bit on this. I was wondering if, Robert, if you thought that maybe the Medicine Wheel, the north end of the Bighorn Mountains in northern Wyoming,
yes.
might predate, I guess, the advent of the Native American groups that live there now.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I guess, lived there before the coming of the whites.
It's so old that they don't know where it came from. And again, I believe it's a mathematical calculator.
I don't know, how old do, what's the oldest that people dated it at, perhaps?
From my understanding, I think it's well over 1,000 years old.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, sir, thank you, and take care. Wild Card Line, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello, Art. Hello.
Hi.
Robert.
Hello.
This is William from Portland, listening on KEX.
Yes, sir.
Robert, first I'd like to say thank you for your perseverance in bringing these things to light so that we may all share them. And I had a comment and a question, please. First, I hope that you are taking precautions considering the unfortunate Dr. Reed and what he's gone through recently. I don't know if you're aware of that. But the powers that be will probably not be very happy with what you're bringing up. So I hope that you're being careful.
Yeah, not at all.
And also, I was wondering, can you give us a little hint of what else you think might be down there? Are possibly any advanced artifacts or machinery or anything?
Yeah, that's a pretty good question. If you were to speculate, Robert, about what else might be down there, what do you think?
Well, based on what I've seen in other locations, it's highly probable. There's some pieces that I'll send you some photographs of that'll explain that. There's certain pieces that I found over there that, well, we found, there's no I in this, but that we found that the only other place that I've ever seen these markings were on the pieces from Roswell.
So you think there's a possible extraterrestrial connection?
That would be the obvious conclusion.
I think we're going to find it.
All right?
Very good. Thank you, Art.
All right, take care.
Take care.
East of the Rockies, Wolf.
Oh, hi, Art and Robert. This is Bob in San Diego.
Yes, sir.
I looked at both of your sites earlier this evening, just briefly. On Art, I noticed you have mainly the artifacts. And, Robert, on yours, aren't there some external shots of, like, carvings in the hills, like Griffin or Sphinxy sorts of things, some cool things that are, you know, shots that you took of the area?
That was the Colorado.
Yeah,
okay.
That's Colorado, an entirely different area. That's a show we did, 2 years ago, Robert?
Yeah.
Nope, that was
ready
before
for the sequel, actually.
Yeah, so this is what you worked on. You worked on this for years with Speaking Wind.
Yes.
Yes, wonderful, wonderful man. Well, thank you very much.
All right, take care, sir. First time caller line, you're on the air with Robert Goldswolf.
Aloha, this is Stuart on Maui, listening to KHVH out of Honolulu.
Yes, sir.
Hawaii's real radio, 830. Thank you,
Aloha.
Robert. Aloha. Thank you, Robert, very much for the work that you're doing. I'm delighted in what you're discovering, but I'm not surprised. Reason being, there's a vast amount of evidence and information which has recently come to light, which offers a paradigm, including, I would say, a full explanation into which what you're discovering would fit. And, of course, I would be very anxious and appreciative if you could make time available. I would like to share this with you, and if it's ever appropriate, with the Art Bell audience.
Do you think what is being discovered here will be spread, the news will spread, and that paradigms will shift, or that it will be essentially in some way reburied?
I think it will spread and it will shift, because I think increasing amounts of evidence will come forward. I have something very specific in mind, which I won't introduce fully at the moment, but no, I think this will be reinforced. I think it will be reinforced because evidence will come forward that there was a global civilization precursor to and predating everything that we know in the written history books today.
All right. I'd appreciate your input. Send it along.
Well, thank you, sir.
All right, take care. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Robert Goldswolf. Hi.
Hello, sir. Mr. Bell.
Yes.
Yes, this is Marcus here at Pistol Pack and Pagan in Portland, Oregon. How you doing, sir?
Just fine.
Good. Long time no talk to, sir. Mr. Goldswolf, my concern happens to deal with your mention of Kennewick Man controversies. I was able to interview Steve McNallan and the Acid True Folk Assembly for my own radio show, which I host on a local community radio station here in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
The follow-up have to that alarms me and directly relates to the risk I think you're facing right now, in that the federal government followed up the Kennewick Man controversy by burying 800 tons of rubble on top of the Kennewick Man site and stealing evidently both of the femurs from the Kennewick Man remains in order to keep them from being subjected to scientific analysis. And most recent development is Steve McNallan and the AFA, and as a matter of fact, Odinic followers generally have now been targeted under Operation Megiddo by the FBI as potential terrorists. What concerns me is the fact that if you have now opened up a site which makes that pale by comparison, you have set yourself and anybody else who threatens the existing world paradigm with even graver consequences.
I agree.
This is too precious a site to allow the federal government, the FBI, the Department of the Interior, or anybody else under the excuse of NAGPRA to continue to suppress the truth.
That's why he's not telling anybody right now where it is.
I think that is an excellent first step, but is there anything further that can be done to make sure that this does not get buried under 8,000 tons of debris?
The only thing that I can answer that with is a long time ago, I spoke to an Indian grandfather who was me, and he was bringing a lot of people down to watch the ceremony, and I said, why are you doing this, grandfather? And he said, because if I do this, then they will think Indian, and we won't go extinct. If they understand that what we're doing is not a game, and that it is as important and as incredible as what they do, then that way will not become extinct. And I think that in this situation, and I've had many conversations with Daniel about this because I was very concerned about bringing it out, which is one of the reasons why I didn't say anything for so many months, because there's not just one, there's several of these sites.
You said there's a dozen of these sites in this country now?
There's a dozen between North and South America.
Good heavens.
And the point was, it has to come out now, and what is the difference if we bring it out, and we bring it out in the light, or someone brings it out in the dark? They will bury it under 800,000 tons of rubble. I've seen it before.
Yeah. I think,
but the message has to get out. If it's in the consciousness, then maybe the people will say, no, you won't let this happen. It's the same kind of thing that happened with the Miami Circle. People got up and they put their voice out, and it was not buried.
That's right. They said, oh, no, you don't.
And I think that that's part of what we're trying to accomplish, is please wake up and please say, no, you cannot do this.
You mentioned Roswell, too, as another odd connection of the symbology, which has cropped up in more than one place. I think that given the government's track record on its suppression of evidence from Roswell through the Mars landers to the archaeological ruins that they buried, there's a pattern of misinformation and disinformation that somebody on top, and in some sort of a cabal or secret government somewhere, has a vested interest in perpetuating, and that is the real enemy. The truth will out, hopefully, in time. And, gentlemen, I congratulate you both on your commitment to doing exactly that.
I thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And, Robert, we've only got time to get the information out again, so, folks, through the eyes of the shaman, you're going to love. I've got it right here. It is absolutely beautiful. Author's original manuscript is what I'm holding. Robert Ghostwolf. You can get an autographed copy. And Days of Destiny, which will deal with all you've been hearing tonight.